Okay, so now I'm happy to announce the first speaker, which has been chosen, elected by the program committee. And I have to look at my mobile phone. It's Markus Weber from KPN AS286. I think the most of you know him. I spoke to him before, and I'm not aware if he has worked for any other company than KPN, actually, but I think he does, or he did. His talk is titled RTBH, RTSBH, RTSD, RTSD COS, so quite fancy. He will tell us something about black holing and advanced black holing, selective black holing, fun stuff you can do to stop some bad packets toward your network.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for introducing me. I know some of you, but not all of you. How does that work here? Mouse button? Next? Ah, okay. Okay. As I just introduced, I'm Markus Weber. I'm 46, and that's reason I need glasses to read the screen here. According to the business card I own, I'm a senior designer in network operations. And I work for KPN Eurings Germany BV, also known as KPN, KPN Eurings, or KPN International. We are the international business unit of the former Dutch incumbent called KPN. We do offer layer 2, layer 3 VPN service and value-added services, mostly for Dutch national customers with international requirements. We do sell as well waves on our own DWDM network and IP transit. The network we operate is AS286. We have footprints locations in Europe, North America, and Asia. We are transit free and mostly Juniper. So most of the examples I will show are on Juniper, but we still have some legacy Cisco. In case that was too fast marketing for you, this will be an infomercial, this talk as well. And you see it in the lower right corner all the time, our AS number and the logo. And in case you is that too small, I even wear a shirt on that. The title of the talk is RTBH, RTSBH, and RTSDCOS. The later one is just the naming I came up with. And if you look into the name, that's remote triggered black holing, remote triggered selective black holing, and remote triggered selective destination or dummy costs, or for the Cisco guys, QoS. However, before jumping onto that, I must admit it's a bit of reinventing the wheel. And all I'm going to talk about is really old. And let me repeat that, it's really old. When I started doing that, I thought, well, this is fancy what I'm trying to achieve here. Then I compiled the talk and submitted it. Oh, no, I first submitted it to the committee. Then I did some in the net, something in our network. And then I compiled here the slide deck and did some more research in the internet and found out, hey, a guy of Colt, Niklas Fischbach, mentioned that already in a talk in 2002 on a Black Hat conference. So I was pretty upset on my own, not doing that research earlier. However, I'm pretty sure that more than half of the people here probably never have thought of doing so. But I'm in good company. Selective black holing, as you might have heard by Job Snyders, is something old as well. It's more or less mentioned in a Cisco paper published 2005 about black holing, which already mentions the idea of having regional black hole targets. And at the last RIPE meeting, there was a talk by a French guy called ABH, and that, if you read that carefully, it's more or less RFC 5635, applied to the sinkhole mentioned in 3882. So I'm in good company, but don't get me wrong, I don't want to make any one of them look bad. Often it's just the idea got forgotten, or it's missing just an example, or others doing it, making you do that as well. So we're going to talk about old things, repeating, and maybe it adds some new ideas. And even though you might use it for something else, it's always nice to see what others do. Yeah, just the reference. And we're going to start with a small network. It's very confidential. Looks like that. You have three boxes, all will serve in the future examples as ingress boxes. And the lower right will be an egress box as well. Now you might ask yourself, is that my network, is it your network? Most examples will be from my perspective, so me as transit provider offering the opportunity or the possibility to trigger that in my network, but you could do that in your network as well. And if you can, let's say, have sufficient upstream capacity and willing to pay for that, and your upstream can handle the load, it's always smart to do it in your network, because you have way more insight in what's happening than when you do it in some other networks. So we put some traffic on the networks, nothing fancy. The green traffic will be the one we will focus on, and the blue one is just I needed a collateral damage victim, so I added something. Now the flooding starts, and you see some green the green traffic gets some attack traffic as well. So you have valid traffic and bad traffic, and if things go stuck, if things go really bad, your AS explodes. Most likely, it's your uplink being overloaded. Eventually, your router, your software router, can't handle the packet load or the amount of traffic. So this is a problem. What you usually do then, and that's nothing new, nothing fancy. It's black hole. It's you tell me, and when I say you, it's the AS 6551 example. You tell me to black hole the traffic, and I do then discard on all ingress boxes the traffic immediately rather than sending you. That's nice, that brings you your network back, but you don't get any traffic for the green, neither the good, neither the bad one. And you have no clue when the attack is over, because you don't get any traffic. So to see if the attack is over, you take the risk by removing the black hole, and eventually you will have the issue with your overloaded uplink as well, again. You can do the black holing in some places. Rather than asking me to drop it everywhere, you could just ask me to, hey, drop it on IN3 and not on the to drop it on IN1 and 2 and not on IN3. When you do selective black holing, you always have to ask yourself in certain scenarios, what does it mean? Now we have here the case that IN1 is using IN2 box as transit box to reach the egress. And that depends then on your network. If you use MPLS, the traffic from IN1 going through IN2 will be label switched, so it will not be black holed, and then it will pass by. If you do a per hop lookup, your traffic will be dropped on IN2 as well, coming from IN1. So, yeah, you can get something working there, but it's not always that straightforward. And if you do something very stupid, you do the dropping on the egress box, which is more or less useless, which upsets just me, because I have to carry all the shit up to the egress box and then drop it there and not get any money back from you for doing so. Now let's ask, is maybe less better? And with less is, the situation was here that the uplink was overloaded. Just take it for now, this one. Why not, and we have seen customers asking us, to place a rate limit for traffic designated towards one box, towards the destination IP address, to rate limit the traffic for that box to avoid an overload. That looks not bad. And if you look, you have now here almost half of the green traffic is still coming through, but don't think that will work. Even though half of the traffic gets through, you still have 50% traffic loss in that example. And if you think of attack ratio between normal traffic ratio, it will be even worse. So it might not work, but your network is still working. The nice thing on that is you could do still some analysis on the traffic coming in. So you could, if you have not taken any traffic traces before or don't have any flow data available, to do some analysis and your upstream is not helping you or your peering partner, then you can still do some analysis and maybe ask for some advanced filtering stuff like there, so manual stuff. And when the attack is over, if the rate limit is well chosen, it might recover on its own. So let me try to reuse that information, which I just use on the egress, however I implemented that, on the ingress side. And I'm pretty sure most people now think immediately, this is what FlowSpec is for. You place some rate limits in your network all over, and you are done. That was something I wanted to avoid. I have my concerns against FlowSpec. I will do it sooner or later and make it available, but at that point in time, I was a clear no to do so. Further, just when talking about FlowSpec is, flow spec is on the edge. So if you have run an MPLS backbone, you might rate limit all the traffic coming in on every edge, but it will still sum up on your backbone. So if you have 30 links ingress on the box, you will get 30 times the amount of traffic in theory if coming in from all the ingress ingress links in your core you have to handle. Just a note on J. At the moment, it's V4. Luckily, it seems that 16.1 supports V6 as well. And with the former example of selective black holing again, think very carefully where the filters are being applied. Juniper, at the moment, pushes it out on all interfaces. And I do have a bad feeling having those filters implemented and used on the core-facing interfaces of my boxes. But it's a personal thing. Getting back to the how to reuse that information I used on the egress before to rate limit somewhere on the ingress side. And that's where the cost part comes in. I know which destination you consider as being attacked. And at that moment, I can, whichever way I do that, mark that traffic look brighter. So just think of the normal traffic as normal colored, and everything under attack, or you tell me to do so, will become brighter. So I have now brighter traffic. And on that brighter traffic, I can filter. I can rate limit, I can make look it bad or worse than the other traffic. That works for V4, V6 nicely, and I can use that information on MPLS as well. I can make use of that information now in my core, rather than like if with ShowSpec, where you can't use that. I could, for instance, handle that traffic in my core as in a scavenger class. A scavenger class is treat that traffic worse than any other traffic. So every bandwidth which is remaining will be given to that traffic, but if you have other traffic, it will be served first. Which makes a bit monitoring of full links a bit harder, because you now don't have to look only at the bandwidth being used on the full interface. You would have to distinguish between traffic class types you transport over the link, but it works. If you really want to avoid overloaded links by bad traffic, you could even rate limit on that, or make a rate limit scavenger class, which means kind of never give more than 50% of the bandwidth of that link to that. And in case the link is loaded with other traffic, don't give it to that as well. But don't fool yourself. If you think of flow spec, you always have kind of a source destination. You have a filter, so it's a bit flow-oriented, flow-focused. With that, it's not. And if you think of that scenario, your green service is under attack, you still have the blue, and now someone threatens to attack the blue as well, you might think it's a smart idea to put the blue traffic as well in the marking for rate limiting. And that will make you look bad, because marking puts every traffic into one class. So it's only bright traffic. It's not bright traffic to green, it's not bright traffic to red, to blue, it's bright traffic. So when you would do that, you would immediately see some packet loss on the blue service as well, even though not attacked. So you have to be careful about that. You can do that selective as well. That's where the S comes in. And here is again an example for an MPLS network. So you only mark the traffic coming in on IN2, that's the lower left box, to be rate limited eventually, and the remaining traffic will be handled as usual. You can combine both selective methods. So you can do black holing in one box and marking and rate limiting traffic coming in from another box, and on a third box you can handle it as usual, normal. Now let's get a bit technical and remote triggering. Remote triggering is, don't log in on every box. So in theory, you could do it with scripting, you could do it with netconf or stuff like that. All these examples will be based on BGP with community signaling. For black holing, a dedicated box sometimes works out as well nicely, because it does not depend on your network connection. But BGP is the most commonly used one. Remote triggered black holing, quite straightforward, it's well known, so this is the only slide about that. It's to modify the next hop of the prefix to point to another next hop in your IBGP, which goes to some dev null interface or discard or DSC interface. a hint. Sometimes it might be useful to use multiple different black hole next hops in your network, because if you have flow data, you can monitor parallel attacks and see which one is over and which one is still ongoing. It's pretty straightforward to implement. Still some room if you try to rewrite the next hop in Juniper on ingress. You might have some fun with that. Which brings us to RTSBH, so remote triggered selective black holing. When Yo promoted that in 2014, he came up with the theorem, most prefixes content have a geographical significance, which decreases as distance between the sender and receiver increases. In other words, if you run a German website hosted somewhere in Germany, you're probably not, Chinese traffic is probably not that significant to you. Which kind of makes it regional thinking, but it might even make sense if you have just two boxes in your network and you see the majority of attack traffic or bad traffic is coming in one box, you might just black hole it selectively on some places. Yoop implemented that by using distances as criteria for where to black hole or where not to black hole, and used the normal IBGP mesh for signaling. As the Netherlands, our primary market is pretty small, and if you do a 500 kilometer around Amsterdam, you black hole complete Amsterdam, which was too coarse for us, so we need some more fine-grained stuff. And therefore, we implemented a slightly different logic, which is black hole on ingress, black hole the ingress traffic on some selected, so you have the possibility to black on any pop where you want, or you do it around the PE you're connected, around the city, around the pop, the city, the country, the continent, and then you can whitelist against certain pops. It's a bit more complex, but allows quite some tweaking. But we had our challenge with that. And the biggest one, which was not the first one, is we have great design of our network. We have route reflectors in the forwarding path. So, and that makes it hard for rewriting the next hop if you need the original next hop in another place, which of another route reflector client. You can fix that for sure by finally cleaning up your design, or you could do some naughty tricks by not replacing the next hop in the RIP, but in the FIP, which is then fun if you have to troubleshoot that with your first line, or your first line knock tries to troubleshoot that and looks in the RIP and says, well, it's in there, it should work, but something else is in the FIP. The initial one, and that's the funny one, some people couldn't believe that, we don't have any route maps with continuous statements in our network. And that was for me kind of, yeah, that would be pretty long if I use that Yoop's semantic there, and that made me to think of an alternative. And what we ended up with is kind of the right design and even more separated from a right approach to design your network, and that is by introducing dedicated route reflectors just for the selective blackholing signaling. And it was so great because it's completely separated from the complete normal IBGP mesh, from the policies, and we have quite some internal policies we use there. It's one place, you can do nicely inject their routes as well, or you can log from there, and it turned out for us to be a good alternative. And you don't need much. Any small Cisco being capable of doing route reflection or any software implementation or a logical system on a Juniper would do that. You're not expecting hundreds of thousands of backhaul routes. And all we do there is all validated SBH announcement from customers. We never propagate through the IBGP mesh. You could still do that and override that by the announcements coming then from the special route reflector with a higher local pref, but we don't distribute it in the normal IBGP mesh and only to the dedicated route reflector. And from the dedicated route reflector for the SBH routes, we know where the announcement came from. We know the logic, what it means for that site to be a black hole outside the pop, outside the city. And then we can push out the routes just to the PEs, which need to know where to, which need to know to black hole that. You could make also another approach by still keeping the original next hop for the PEs not supposed to black hole, but we opted against that. That's just the thinking of if you have customer with multiple connections, if you start to announce a more specific on one connection, not on the other, you shift some traffic around there, and that's what we wanted to avoid. But it's your choice. The same thing here as a picture. just skip that over. Some configuration snippets. Not going to go through that. We don't have the time. But it's in the presentation. And if you have questions or find some typos, just let me know. One thing to mention on regional blackholing, selective blackholing, is you might have a different understanding than me has. You might think often in geolocation stuff like don't blackhole everything outside Germany would give you the German traffic. Might be the case, but might be not, because for me, the significance is where the traffic is coming into my network, where are the interconnects. And I made an example of our own network, so I'm not making anyone else look bad. I guess there's just one other big doing that. And that's a prefix originated out of the Netherlands with blackholed outside the country. And you see that more or less works. You have some fails connections still from Belgium and from Germany. That's just those guys bring the traffic to the Netherlands and interconnect with us there. But it works. If you do the same thing in Spain, you will get all black. Why that? Well, we don't have any public interconnects to the network, to the internet in Spain. We use that just for VPN termination on NNIs. So if you ever want to make that kind of a criteria to select your new upstream provider or peering partner, make sure you test it upfront. Ask for test IPs and ask for IPs to monitor that. Otherwise, you might get some surprises and not what you wanted. And another problem with selective blackholing is I know what you don't know. I know where the traffic came into my network. You don't see that unless I would share that with you in some graphs. Here in this example, it's quite easy for me to see, okay, it's coming from the West Coast and something from London, something from Frankfurt, but you don't have that information. And we wanted to make that available, but then sometimes company policies about a single lock-on system and design prevents things from showing up in the real world. So that's a big problem with selective blackholing. Normally, if you're under attack, you are stressed. You don't have the time to play around to find the right combination to drop most of the bad traffic. So this is a challenge. Which brings me now to RTSD COS. Remote triggered selective destination, or dummy, because it's just the basic of COS mechanisms or QoS mechanisms class of service. COS or QoS, Juniper prefers COS, Cisco QoS. I'm not a friend of that. A lot of people aren't a friend of that, but it's around, it's being used, and it even might make sense. I can tell you a story. 12 years ago, we had done horrible overloaded peering with some other incumbent, and we had problems getting that upgraded, and we had a lot of, so it was egress overloaded, and we had a lot of end users complaining, you suck. What to do, you could do cost mechanisms, basic cost mechanism to prioritize UDP and ICMP, and 90% of the complaints will go away. Just by them doing trace or MTR will not show up your hop as being the bad one, or the link being the bad one that the traffic is dropped. We are not doing that. We have enough capacity these days, but you can abuse such things. One thing you must be aware of doing COS is more than next hop rewriting. Next hop rewriting is basic BGP and forwarding stuff, but COS or QoS is way more, higher hardware requirements, and you might have some limitations. And if you want to do that in your complete network, so you want to make use of that in your core, you need a clean COS domain. So all the traffic must be correctly classified on the ingress and transported in your network. Otherwise, you might have some strange effects if suddenly bright traffic gets normal color or normal traffic gets bright color, and then you might do stupid things. Now, I said we are Juniper, so I'm just giving you a short introduction into simplified JCOS. What you do is on ingress, you do some classification that might be on the interface where the traffic's coming in. You might do some checks on the COS bits, so the code points, or you might do even look into the packet header for UDP ports or stuff like that. Then you do some policing. When you do the classification, you associate the traffic with some forwarding class in Juniper called. This is just a different brightness of the traffic you could think of. So you could distinguish between different traffic type you classified. Then you do some policing, you do some queuing, shaping, scheduling, however you want to call that, and that's handling the traffic in the various different traffic classes depending on some criteria like load shedder, like limited bandwidth, prioritized traffic, bigger buffers or not. And then on the egress, you do rewrite. This is setting the cost bits or the code points on the egress packet. And if you look at normal transit packets, cost life in our network, depending on what you use, it might look different, is on the egress, we just assign every packet from IP transit service to be best effort. We keep that information, then it becomes an MPLS packet, so we have to set the experimental bit or traffic class bit in the MPLS header. We set that to zero, then we have to classify on the next hop the MPLS packet to be best effort, then we have to do that the same again, rewriting. Now we come to the penultimate hop, and there's important what you do. We do for IPv6, we do explicit null label signaling. For V4, we don't do so. The last label will be popped on the penultimate hop PE for V4. So we have to keep in mind that we have to set now for the IPv4 packet, which is now native, no longer MPLS. The IP precedence bit we use in the core IP precedence on the edge DSCP. Don't ask me why it is like it is. And then on the egress, you have to think of doing the classification for all that. And then on the egress, you do DHCP, and we use even other traffic class then for that. The idea, how I was brought by that, was in the RFC 3882, there's mentioned kind of you could use sinkhole devices and you could apply rate limits on that. And if you think about sinkhole devices in a transit network, you do have a problem because either first the scale of the number of devices, either you have to transport the traffic somewhere to do that rate limiting, or you have to deploy a lot of boxes, and I don't get any money for that. So I was thinking about how to do that, and I don't know why it came along that. And I can use cost mechanisms, the standard cost mechanisms, to achieve for destination IP traffic a rate limit without any further boxes or stuff like that, or flow spec. And the idea is, as on the previous slide shown, quite simple. Every normal traffic is best effort, and the special traffic will be no effort traffic. So I will make that brighter. And then on the egress or even in the core, I use a scavenger class or I do rate limits. And for the signaling on the S part in the name, I use the same as SBH. Some configuration, this is just the static part for doing the classification, the standard classification, the rewrites. It's all in there and I'm allowed to share that with you. Even though this is very basic, you might want to do some smarter things there. The most challenging part is probably for most of you, how to use that information, which is coming from BGP, to use that information to override the best effort default classification done on the ingress interface. And on Juniper, you find a few examples how to do that. On Cisco, you find way more. On Juniper, I left out something here in the previous slide on that, and that's called forwarding policy. And all you do on Juniper is that in the forwarding table, when you import the data from your or export the data from your RIP, you put some extra information in your FIP. And every time there's a route lookup, the classification override will take place. Yes, and it has no major impact. I loaded a full table for rewriting with different class rewriting, worked without a problem, and even J engineering confirmed it has insignificant impact. The memory requirements should not do any harm, should not be a problem, and overwriting is just some microcodes and no impact set. The only problem on Juniper, on at least on everything up to 13.3, is debugging on that. On the CLI, you can't see it at all, or at least I haven't found it, and Juniper hasn't shared anything with me. You can see something on the line card, but yeah. What about Cisco, you might ask, and in the Black Hat presentation 2002, it was already in there. You find a lot of examples, if you know what to look for, on Cisco, it's called QPPB, for cost policy propagation with VR by GP. I haven't tested in the lab, please forgive me. And the two magic things is on the BGP, there's a table map statement that is similar to what on Juniper is for the BGP RIP to import in the FIP, you can do some magic. You could, for instance, limit it. If you operate a route server, for instance, on a software-based router, you don't need all that information in the FIP. You could just exclude it from being pushed in the FIP and keep a default route in the FIP and only keep it in the RIP. But at the same time, you could set, for instance, the cost group on the Juniper, on the Cisco, or you can set the precedence bits. And then you reference that information in the Ceph forwarding information base from your interface by using the BGP policy destination IP cost map or IP precedence map, and it works even for, supposed to work even for source IP address referencing. This example here leaves out all the magic for using then the policy map to do the scheduling and rate limiting. That's backward. Cool. For sure it's fancy, and if you do some more fancy costings, you probably can do even more with that. And I dare to put the statement RTS DCOS is the better RTS BH. Why? It still protects your network from a severe overload causing big issues with you. It allows me to use that information in my core as well, while still giving you some packets to look at for further analysis. For sure, if you have automated systems in place, you probably don't need that. They might be even fooled or confused by that. But if you do a lot of things manually, it might have an advantage on that. You might have an advantage. Keep in mind that same with black holing, it doesn't help to restore the service. Your service will be still affected and not available in most cases till the end of the attack. And you might have some overlaps if you use that at the same time for various for multiple services. Just a last reminder on that, don't underestimate cost setup and maintenance or hardware requirements on that. It's more than with black holing. And I don't want to compete with FlowSpec. It's a different story. If you have the choice FlowSpec or maybe something like that, I would always recommend to you use FlowSpec. You have way more things you could achieve with that. On the other hand, you can't protect your core with FlowSpec. You will still eventually face, depending on the filtering and what is getting through, problems with bandwidth in your network eventually. It all depends on what you have. Available, I wanted to release it today, but I'm basically lacking behind the annoying part, which is documentation and changing of delivery and monitoring stuff. Before Christmas, it will be available. And after that, I will go to FlowSpec. That's the end. Hey, I almost made it in time. It's amazing. Thank you. No more time for questions, I assume.
I think we can have two questions, if there are questions. There is one.
Yeah, Teosys 11 again. How much time did it cost to implement RTDS DCOS in your network?
To be honest, we had already some cost in the backbone, so it was just adjusting that. And to push out the configuration, I spent 2 afternoons, so it wasn't that big. I'm still lacking, let's say, the customer-facing ports, but I know all them, so it's just the script running over the network and pushing that out. If you don't have that use, and if you have a mixed environment, you probably have a bigger problem to get all the different vendors doing the same stuff. No more?
No questions?
I'm shocked.
Okay, then thank you, Markus.
Yep.